At a central Sydney hotel, a room full of tradesmen and subcontractors talk about how to recover money that's owed to them.
The idea of the meeting this morning, it's for us to just think through what we're going to be faced with across here today and maybe what the best way forward will be to increase the chances of getting your money back. Brad Thompson.
These subcontractors worked for a large construction firm. They were working on government projects, roads and school buildings, the sort of projects the subbies thought would guarantee payment. But they didn't.
My argument is, every project we go to these days, government-funded projects, we can't get money out of them. And that's the worst bit. The bills are racking up, and we can't get money out of them. You go direct to the main source, and they say we can't do nothing about it. So where do we stand liably? We take on big government projects, thinking that we can always go back to the government. We go nowhere, mate.
Laurie was a subcontractor for Reed Constructions. Reed is one of several construction firms doing major projects that have failed in the past 2 months. And in all these collapses, involving Reed, the Hastie Group, St Hilliers Construction and the Aegis Consortium, the money chain has broken down, leaving thousands of workers, subcontractors and suppliers with a cash flow crisis. At least two state governments, New South Wales and Victoria, are caught up in the collapses. They face questions over a lack of due diligence. How thorough were the checks on the financial viability of construction companies contracted to complete major government projects? And now that the projects have run out of money, should governments pay more to bail them out? That could set a bad and very costly precedent for a whole range of public-private partnerships, known as PPPs, where private firms build public infrastructure. I'm Stan Correy, and today Background Briefing looks at two recent construction industry failures. One involves Reed Constructions, and the other St Hilliers and the Aegis Consortium, whose project to build the Ararat prison in Victoria under a public-private partnership has ground to a halt. In New South Wales, Reed Constructions won a number of contracts with state government agencies, including Roads and Maritime Services, or RMS. Laurie was a subcontractor for Reed on road building contracts.
What's your business?
We do non-destructive excavation, yeah. Machines, plant hire, all sorts of stuff.
You were with Reed?
We were with Reed on numerous projects. Got bitten for a large amount of money. Once again, Reed's never came through by paying. Went to RMS numerous times. They failed to act on it. That was probably 8-9 months ago. We spoke to RMS numerous times. RMS said they couldn't do nothing about it. That's the most distressing point, when you pay your taxes and everything and the government can't do nothing for you.
So where do you think it'll go now?
Class it as a write-off, I suppose. It's just every project you go to these days, you're always chasing your money.
150 kilometres to the south in Nowra, carpenter Mark Edwards was in the same position. He was a subcontractor for the building firm St Hilliers, working on a government housing development. It was shut down.
My name's Mark, I'm a subcontract carpenter. I just want to do my work and get paid for it, and it's not working out like that. You get promised you're going to get paid for the work you do, and then it's very disappointing that you've got to go through this situation where they string you out as long as they possibly can for payment, and then at the end of the road, you're not going to get paid. It's disappointing. It makes you want to get out of the building game.
Mark was working on one of a dozen or more St Hilliers projects that were closed in New South Wales, Victoria, Queensland and the ACT. In the construction industry, the impact of corporate failure spreads far and wide. Changes to work practices in the industry over recent years, with subcontractors replacing employees, has accentuated the flow-on effect of failures. Debt recovery specialist Glenn Bauer.
There are less and less employees and more subcontractors. And a lot of those subcontractors, you know, go one day being an employee to the next day being a subcontractor. But as they do that, they become much more vulnerable because they don't have the same rights in respect of their entitlements that employees have. They are merely unsecured creditors when things go wrong. Very, very different to being an employee. And lots of these subcontractors are small family-run businesses with their homes on the line. The banks have got them stitched up. bank may be providing an overdraft, working capital for these small family businesses. So cash flow is imperative.
Glenn Bauer specialises in debt recovery for subcontractors, and he's been especially busy this year because of a downturn in the construction industry.
Because the market is contracting, people who don't have the next job to go on to are now paying attention to outstanding monies that are in arrears, some up to and over 6, 12, 18 months. But they're now reviewing those outstanding payments and asking us to help recover them because the next job isn't there to go on to, the cash flow isn't there. And what that causes is a domino effect, because as one company can't pay, then the company that is owed the money can't pay, and so on and so forth.
There are about 2,000 creditors, subcontractors and others, seeking payment from the New South Wales-based builder Reed Constructions. Reed's collapsed despite having received a significant slice of federal government money for building projects in the past few years. Glenn Bauer says Reed was a major player in the building of school halls and other facilities as part of the federal government's Building the Education Revolution, known as BER.
Reed, I understand, were one of the largest recipients of BER work, somewhere around about $400 million. So over the last few years, Reed have been responsible for huge amounts of work, received huge amounts of money, but middle of last year, subcontractors working to Reed on government projects, projects for the Department of Education, projects for the Roads and Maritime Services of New South Wales, started to experience slow payment and non-payment by Reed. Reed evidently experiencing cash flow problems, which just was extraordinary in light of the amount of money they received from the BER. So towards the end of last year, subcontractors who, being starved of payment, went to the likes of the Roads and Maritime Services and said, listen, we're not getting paid here. Can you make sure that we get paid? Roads and Maritime Services commissioned an investigation into Reed's financial position and came back with a report ticking Reed's health and financial position, and Roads and Maritime Services then made it clear to the subbies, everything's okay, let's get on with the job. Well, nothing changed. The Roads and Maritime Services advanced more money to Reed, even ahead of what Reed was due, but still the subbies weren't getting the money.
The owner of the Reed Group, Jeff Reed, claims the New South Wales government owes it $60 million for work on school and road projects. He says Reed Constructions was, quote, forced into voluntary administration following the Roads and Maritime Services' premature and unreasonable action in terminating contracts. Jeff Reed has indicated he'll be suing the New South Wales government, but he's declined to comment further, apart from speaking briefly to an ABC News reporter as he left a creditors' meeting.
Jeffrey, all these people are owed so much money. Are they going to get it?
I think there's a very good chance they'll get a lot of it. It's very hard to say because the vagaries of litigation never cease to surprise me.
He claims he's owed most of it from the New South Wales government, whom he blames for his company's demise.
And I am mystified at the government's hardline attitude when they know so many people suffer from it. And they, deep in their heart, they know they owe us money.
Still, there's some remorse.
I feel very sad about it. I wonder what I could have done differently in the past.
The creditors' meeting identified $80 million that Reed Constructions owed subcontractors. There are laws in each state and territory to protect the payments to subcontractors. These security of payment laws are designed to keep up the cash flow that's the lifeblood of the subbies. Glenn Bauer.
We specialise in the building and construction industry using what's known as Security of Payment Act legislation, specifically designed to ensure continuity of payment to subcontractors. It's payment on account on a pay now, argue later basis to keep the subbies going and to stop them from being starved of vital cash flow. In terms of flaws, it probably is let down at the enforcement stage. So quite often we will get a judgment in favour of a subby, but then we go to enforce and the company that owes the money will then give us the runaround, even go into voluntary administration, liquidation, just to get out of meeting their obligations.
Under the Security of Payment legislation, subcontractors also have to guarantee they'll pay their employees' entitlements and their suppliers. Perry Theophanis was a subbie for Reed on a road contract in Sydney South.
My name's Perry Theophanis. I work for Complete Linemarking and Services, and we were involved with the works at the Alpha Point Bridge, painting all the lines at the end of the project. We all sign statutory declarations that we'd give to RMS or any government authority that we work for, that we have paid our superannuation, our public liability, our workers' comp, we've paid our employees and our suppliers. I've done it. I've paid it as I've gone along. There's some suppliers at the moment that I'm still waiting to get some payments because we've got a cash flow problem.
Yeah.
But as soon as I can, I will pay, and Reed should be held responsible and RMS should be held responsible.
So you've done all your payments, but you're not getting the payments from,
right,
the construction company or the government.
Yeah. I've spoken to some of the people that I actually owed money, and we're paying slowly to try and keep our liquidity going, but everyone else can walk away from it, and it's wrong.
Perry Theophanis says his family company is owed $69,000 by Reed Constructions. He says the cash flow from the contract slowed to a trickle more than a year ago.
It started probably around April 2011 when payments became slow, but we were contracted to do that work. And then the final part, which we haven't been paid for, which was in October, to finish that road works. We did all the work and we've never received anything. I'd been in contact with the CEO of Reed Construction, and I was assured that money was coming from RMS and other projects, and just wait. I have been to my local member. My local member has been in contact with the finance minister, the transport minister, has spoken to Barry O'Farrell, and they're looking into it.
Following a stream of complaints from subcontractors about non-payment, the New South Wales government carried out a financial check on Reed Constructions. This is an extract from a letter sent by Roads and Maritime Services to one of the subcontractors.
In late 2011, senior management from Reed advised Roads and Maritime Services that it was having short-term cash flow difficulties. RMS assisted by processing Reed's monthly payments more quickly than required by the contract to enable Reed to pay its debts speedily. Roads and Maritime Services commissioned a financial capacity check on Reed at that time. This check reported Reed to be in a financially sound position based on 30th of June 2011 audited accounts.
But according to industry insiders, there were clear warning signs about Reed's deeper financial difficulties. For example, the company's outstanding claims for money owed by the New South Wales government as a result of work done on school buildings through the BER program.
Any view of Reed's financial accounts would have seen those claims. It's not as though they were created in the last 6 months. They've been there for some time.
Chartered accountant David Hicks specialises in the construction industry.
In respect to the BER, I understand from industry sources that all bar Reeds signed off their BER claims on the government in March 2011. So that would say that those claims for Reeds have been there since then also.
And as well as the BER claims, there's a perennial problem in the construction industry with changes or variations to contracts as the work is being done. For example, design changes or things that need to be moved. This was a particular problem on Reed's projects for Roads and Maritime Services. David Hicks.
Included in the contracts are events of default. If Reed had stopped work on the projects, seeking clarification of their variation claims on the government, I'm not a lawyer, but that could be construed as a default under the contract. So they need to keep working. And when they keep working, they keep accumulating costs attaching to that. It's a catch-22, and the subcontractors finish up being owed monies which are the subject of a variation claim on the government. But I don't think there's any surprise for anyone that those claims are there. All the subcontractors knew the difficulties that Reeds were under with the government at the BER and the RMS, or Roads and Transport level.
Chartered accountant David Hicks. Background Briefing sought an interview with the Roads Minister, Duncan Gay, which he declined. But the Minister's office did provide a written response to a series of questions. In relation to the subcontractor's claims, it says,
RMS has already paid Reed all amounts which Reed is entitled to under its contracts with RMS. That Reed has not paid its subcontractors for the work carried out by subcontractors is a matter which only Reed can comment on.
And in relation to the due diligence done by the government on Reed Constructions, the government is currently considering whether changes to its procurement policies are warranted, based on the insolvency of a number of contractors. The administrators, Ferrier Hodgson, are currently investigating the complex corporate structure of the Reed Group of Companies to find out where the money has gone. Despite the security of payment laws, none of the subcontractors or unsecured creditors of the company are optimistic about being paid. They'll have to wait for the administrator's report and more legal action. The problems for subcontractors and the government caused by the collapse of Reed Constructions in New South Wales are amplified in Victoria. In the western Victorian town of Ararat, a $400 million project to build a new prison has fallen over.
For Sharon Brown, news today that he's lost his job on the suspended Ararat prison upgrade couldn't have come at a worse time.
My wife and I got married in December, and we only found out we were pregnant due to have a baby in December last week, so this is all pretty bad news for me.
And he's not alone. This small town devastated as hundreds of jobs are axed and payments to subcontractors are frozen.
Until this is all sort of sorted out, we're sort of in no man's land, if you like.
We've all got mortgages and families and kids to put through school.
That was the news on the 16th of May, when St Hilliers, the building company at Ararat, went into voluntary administration. 2 months later, the project is still closed. Just last week, Ararat's subcontractors and workers joined a demonstration in Melbourne where building unions were protesting against the industrial policies of the Baillieu government.
Amongst the group of us, there's probably about 50 subbies owed 10 to 20 million just in 1 month's claim. We haven't been paid since work done in March. We've been waiting patiently all this time and we're still left in the dark, and last we're here, everyone's scattering.
How's everyone surviving at the moment? I imagine you're not being paid.
That's right, yeah. We're in deep. We're using our overdrafts. We're living from hand to mouth.
The Ararat Prison Project was a public-private partnership, a PPP. St Hilliers, along with a New Zealand company, Hawkins, were the builders on the project. The overall contract was won by the Aegis Consortium, made up of the Commonwealth Bank and the German multinational Bilfinger Berger, working in partnership with the building companies. The job was to design, build, and then maintain the new jail extension for 25 years. On the background briefing website, there's an infographic which shows all the connections of the Ararat Prison PPP, the so-called contractual relationships. But all those relationships are now in disarray, as this German online news report describes.
Projektgesellschaft Ararat Prison ist insolvent. Bilfinger Berger ist im australischen Bundesstaat Victoria an einer Projektgesellschaft beteiligt, die auf Basis
Bilfinger Berger is one of the partners in a project company in the Australian state of Victoria, whose task it is to build the correctional facility Ararat Prison on the basis of a public-private partnership. The project was launched in May 2010, but from the beginning, and especially in recent months, there have been significant delays and cost overruns during construction. This subsequently led to the insolvency of one of the authorised contractors and the cessation of work. Since the parties could not agree on a joint approach in the short term, the project company was forced to file for bankruptcy.
In 2011,
the Ararat Prison PPP was a finalist in the National Infrastructure Awards run by an industry lobby group called Infrastructure Partnerships Australia. The project was a finalist in the financial excellence category. If Peter Berlin had been a judge at the awards, the prison project wouldn't have qualified. His family business, Able Earth Movers, is owed over $1 million for work at Ararat.
One of the major problems is the whole thing was conceptually flawed from the first instance. How can you possibly put a great group of builders on site? It wasn't the best site. It's next to a lake and it periodically flooded. It's next to existing jail, so there were security issues. The people that packaged all this together up in, well, finalised it in 2010, should have all collectively realised, in my opinion, that they're on a mission to nowhere.
The Commonwealth Bank thought the prison project was a good deal. As one banking analyst told Background Briefing, the CBA was playing both sides of the fence. It was an investor in the Aegis Consortium, the private company in partnership with the Victorian Department of Justice. And it was also the leading financier of the project, along with three other banks. With that kind of financial backing, subcontractors were happy to work on the project.
You know, as far as we knew, it should have been quite a good job, quite a financial job for us and quite a secure job.
Karen Lawler's family has a bricklaying business, and she spoke to ABC Radio Ballarat soon after work stopped on the project in May.
How much are you owed, Karen?
We're close to about $450,000.
How many employees do you have and how many were working on the job for you?
We have a total of about 25 employees. Not all of them probably working on the job at the one time, but we had probably three quarters up there quite a lot of the time.
What does that $450,000 mean for your business? Do you know yet?
No, we don't. We don't. Like, we've still got to try and run our business. We have a family, as do all the other subcontractors, and you work on a job in good faith.
The Ararat prison contract was signed under the Brumby Labor government. But most of the construction work has happened under the management of the Baillieu Liberal government. Both Labor and Liberal politicians love public-private partnerships. The funding arrangements and the financial risk is all with the private sector. If anything goes wrong, then the private sector has to pay up. Victorian Premier Ted Baillieu emphasised this at a press conference soon after work stopped at Ararat.
This is, as I said yesterday, a public-private partnership. The special purpose vehicle, Aegis, which is established to be the consortium for the private sector, they have the responsibility for all the contractors and the subcontractors and to get the work done. That's the nature of a public-private partnership. It's up to them now to do what's necessary to get the project up and running again.
Weeks later, the Ararat prison subcontractors still haven't received any money. St Hilliers boss Tim Casey says one of the main reasons they couldn't continue the work was because of government interference in the building design process, which had caused a budget blowout. Under the contract, the builder is responsible for the design of the project. The government department can make suggestions but can't interfere. Tim Casey.
I can say there are also some cost implications in there that were changes the state wanted to the way in which the new prison and existing prison was going to be integrated. Part of that was an additional building as well. So there was a package of issues that we had to deal with. We had indicated the amount of money that we could afford to put in. Bill Fingerberg and Commonwealth Bank had also made the decision to contribute significant amounts of money. Ultimately, we did require a contribution from the government.
That's St Hilliers boss Tim Casey. Peter Berlin's firm is owed $1.3 million for work at Ararat. He doesn't claim to know all that went wrong, but his research reveals that the problems for the project go right back to when work began on the site.
It was design and build, with the builder starting almost immediately with no or little or no design formulated. Builders go on site and they need a direction, they need a specification, and they need to have an understanding of what they've got to construct and a vision into the future so they're not tripping over themselves. But if the designers are behind them instead of in front of them, well, inevitably they'd get to the point where periodically the builders would be tripping themselves up by doing work and then finding that later on the design's approved and come back with a change, and therefore they have to pull existing work apart and go through the time delay that that process takes. So all that's, to my mind, a major factor.
Peter Berlin from Able Earth Movers. Sources familiar with the project have told Background Briefing that when there were meetings on the site, there were lots of arguments about whether building work should be started before they had proper design documents to work with. Design delays eventually led to the collapse of the whole project. Building unions blamed it on the importation of Chinese doors that were the wrong size. In fact, it was much more than doors. Money was lost on buying the wrong security cameras, on building materials for acoustic insulation, on mechanical services like plumbing and drainage. Contract variations in building contracts are, to use a cliche, a legal minefield. Barrister Ian Bailey has written textbooks on Australian construction law and is a professor at Melbourne University Law School.
Where you deal with government agencies and you've got a school or a hospital or possibly a jail, where the departmental vehicle that is in fact going to use the building have people who want to make contributions, this is where you can get problems, because they want to introduce some modification to the design, which in fact is extra work. But they disguise it as nothing more than, oh, just resolution of the design details. And so you do get some problems. Now, I understand that with Ararat, that's a massive problem.
Ian Bailey says it's not unusual for a comment to be seen as a direction. For example,
wouldn't it be better to have 15-foot ceilings instead of 10-foot ceilings? Is that an instruction to make them 5 foot taller? Or if we don't make them 5 foot taller, does that mean that we won't get paid? Or what do we do? And if it isn't resolved quickly, you can end up with this rolling tsunami of issues that just lie really in the way in which the contract itself allocates responsibility for design and the risk of design.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your attendance here tonight on a nice, lovely winter's night in Ararat.
In Ararat, the small business community is feeling the pinch of the prison project closure.
My name's Phil Clark. Anyway, I'm the director of one of the directors of First National Real Estate in Ararat, a passionate and proud business owner, member of the Ararat Regional Business Association. I've been on the committee for about 10 years. We see ourselves as a body representing all the business community because every business is affected by it. The prison development closure that's happened recently. We're concerned for all local contractors and the effect on their business and their employees. We're concerned for the Ararat community and their microeconomy.
The Ararat community feels the project has become a political football. At the public meeting, Phil Clark read out a letter that had been sent to the Victorian Premier, Mr. Bailey.
It was not the contractors that set up the public-private partnership, and we acknowledge that this project was a Brumby government project. However, the ongoing chaos that has supposedly occurred can be put down to the lack of oversight by the government. We trusted that our town would not have our local contractors burnt, as had happened to the government projects over the years, where the big guys go under and leave the small guys bleeding. We remember Mr. Bailey. We are seeing local people owed hundreds of thousands of dollars that is sitting on their overdrafts, drowning in further each day as another lot of interest gets stacked up on top.
The key phrase in that letter to Mr. Bailey, read out by Phil Clark, is lack of oversight. Governments, state and federal, want the private sector to provide more funding for infrastructure projects. But private investors are becoming wary of putting their money into projects where they're carrying all the risk. So far, the money to kickstart the Ararat prison extension and pay the subcontractors hasn't been found. Ararat community representative on the prison project, Bill Jones.
So it's not as simple as saying, contractor A, you built the place, you haven't paid your subcontractors, we're going to give you some more money to pay it back. My own view is that because it's a public-private partnership and it works at a different level to just a government and a building contractor, is that government would have to be very, very careful about putting money into this when it's got dozens of these other PPPs in process across Victoria, and indeed there are very many of them in process across Australia. If a government set the precedent of bailing this out by just throwing cash into it, outside of its contractual obligations, then that precedent becomes very costly for all of us for the future, and it rewrites how contractors and how governments do business and how financiers do business. You might ask, okay, if it's a consortium, where's the money coming from? The money is coming ostensibly from the Commonwealth Bank. The Commonwealth Bank are the financiers and underwriters of this project. It is not the state government of Victoria.
At the end of last week, consortium partner and lead financier, the Commonwealth Bank, was still talking with the Victorian government about restarting work. Neither would talk to Background Briefing about the current status of the project or the prospect of subcontractors getting the monies they're owed. But Premier Ted Baillieu has reiterated his support for PPPs.
Yes, I have faith in PPPs, but they need scrutiny and they need systems and they need to be continually upgraded in terms of their application. And my view is that if you're in a PPP as a government and the parties to the PPP have accepted risk and been paid or accepted a contractual position to be paid for that risk assumption, then they must honour their part of the bargain. And that's our attitude, and we are very firm about that.
That firm attitude doesn't impress Ararat Prison subcontractor Peter Berlin. He says the subcontractors were left in the dark about problems that were known to be looming.
I'm just really disappointed with all this because if there was a problem, it could have been flagged in December so that people had some sort of a notice of it. We would have curtailed our holidays. We would have cut things around in terms of our commitment to our work staff and our suppliers. We could have worked our way into a much better financial position to be able to handle all this. And clearly the people who had the knowledge didn't want to convey it. And to round the conversation off, I think the people, I call them the bean counters or the suits up in the Commonwealth Bank up in Sydney, I think they just naively have an expectation that when the gates will be open, there will be a queue of contractors sitting there with their utes and their men just ready to pour onto the site and pick up where they were before.
Yeah.
And the reality is a long way different from that. The longer the dispute goes on, the less there will be people that are prepared and have got an interest to go back on site.
Background Briefing's coordinating producer is Linda McGuinness. Research by Anna Whitfeld. Technical production, Mark Don. Thanks to Anthony Stewart from the ABC in Ballarat for his research and for recording the public meeting in Ararat. The executive producer is Chris Bullock, and I'm Stan Correy.